everyone. Happy what is today? Wednesday evening. I am reading from I Am That, and the message I am reading is message number 7, called The Mind. And I started this message 2 weeks ago. Just trying to get a brighter light here. Okay, I started this message 2 weeks ago. Kind of in the middle of it. What I will do is back up a paragraph and read, and then go forward. The last paragraph that I read was this. The questioner said, "Surely you see the actual world as it surrounds you. You seem to behave quite normally." And Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "That is how it appears to you. What in your case occupies the entire field of consciousness is a mere speck in mine. The world lasts but for a moment. It is your memory that makes you think that the world continues. Myself, I don't live by memory. I see the world as it is, a momentary appearance in consciousness." And when I read that 2 weeks ago, I shared a story about my experience of being the universe and kind of coming and going, coming and going, coming and going into manifestation, out of manifestation, into manifestation, out of manifestation. And some of you, even if you weren't here 2 weeks ago when I shared that story, you may have heard it in yesterday's Gentle Healing Tip. So that's where we left off last week, with Nisargadatta saying that the world is a speck, a momentary appearance, and then it is gone. So now we're going to continue forward from that point. So here's what the questioner says. In your consciousness? And of course, the questioner is saying that because Nisargadatta says, that the world lasts but for a moment, right? I see the world as it is, a momentary appearance in consciousness. And again, the questioner says, in your consciousness? And Nisargadatta says, all idea of me and mine, and even of I am, is in consciousness. I just want to tell you that I ran across a picture of Nisargadatta with a quote that I had never heard Nisargadatta say before. Maybe it's somewhere in this book. Maybe we'll run into it. But I understood the quote perfectly, and I love the quote so much that I took a screenshot, and I'm hoping to have it printed and framed and hung in my office. And this is the quote that I found on a picture of Nisargadatta. I'm opening it up so I can read it perfectly. It says, "I am that which knows that I am. I am that which knows that I am." September, I went to a retreat with Anne, who is here in the sanctuary, as well as with some other friends in New Mexico. This retreat was called an Enlightenment Intensive. And in the Enlightenment Intensive, we did dyads as we contemplated, in my case, the question, what am I? And the point that I reached in that intensive was a point of knowing myself as that which sees even what we call the observer. I came to see the observer and the I am presence as an object, like thoughts are an object. I came to see the observer and the I am presence as an object within something that could not be objectified at all. And that something, that seer, is what I am. And that's what Nisargadatta is pointing to in the quote that I want to print and frame. And that's also what he is saying here. He says, all idea of me and mine and even I am is in consciousness. Many people speak about I am as if when you reach the I am presence, you know, that's the pinnacle. And when you reach the I am presence, that is beyond the ego. But it is not the pinnacle. Because with very subtle noticing, you actually notice that you can see or sense or feel. I don't know which word is best because it's really none of them. It's something else. Know, maybe. Be aware of the I am presence. It's something that you know. It's a quality. And when you become aware of the fact that you know the I am presence, you then have to turn around and look even further and ask, what knows this? And again, in that inquiry, I was not able to get to a quality or get to an object or get to a thing. And that again is what Nisargadatta is pointing to in this quote that I want to print and frame. He says, I am that which knows that I am. Right? I am that which is aware of my existence. The existence is something I am aware of, but I am that's aware of it. So continuing, Nisargadatta says, all idea of me and mine and even of I am is in consciousness. And the questioner says, is then your absolute being unconscious? Nisargadatta says, the idea of unconscious exists in consciousness only. The questioner says, then how do you know you are in the supreme state? I am in it. It is the only natural state. And the questioner says, can you describe it? Nisargadatta says, only by negation, as uncaused, independent, unrelated, undivided, uncomposed, unshakable, unquestionable, and unreachable by effort. Every positive definition is from memory and therefore inapplicable. And yet my state is supremely actual and therefore possible, realizable, attainable. I think what I want to say is that today, earlier, I was teaching the guiding light, and since the The guiding light has three different topics, and I was teaching on the most current topic, which is the teachings of Ramana Maharshi. And if one were to go to reginadonacres.com and look under audios, the guiding light, you would find the link for the teaching Ramana Maharshi. And when you open that page up, you would find that the audios are numbered. And my teaching today is called Experience Number Two. And if there's anybody at all who's interested in what is beyond consciousness, I highly recommend listening to that teaching. What I did today is I read from Bernadette Roberts' What is the Self? As she described to the best of her ability the process of awakening from consciousness to that which is beyond consciousness, which she calls an entirely new dimension. In fact, let me just read that little part from the book again. Assuming I can find it again. I think I mentioned the page number today. I think I said it was 40 or something similar to 40, so maybe I'll be able to find it since I have that to go by. Yep, here it is. Let's see. She says, let me see if I can find it. She talks about an irreversible permanent suspension of consciousness, because again, this is beyond consciousness. An irreversible permanent suspension of consciousness, which she calls the beginning of the no-self dimension. Let's see, I wanted to find, there were particular words I remember reading today that I wanted to find though. She says, ecstasy, or some of you may be more familiar with the term bliss, does not define the new dimension of existence, the no-self condition. Rather, ecstasy is the vehicle, or bliss is the vehicle, or samadhi is the vehicle of crossing over to the new dimension of existence. That's still not what I'm looking for. Here we go. She goes, once on the other side, we can no longer speak of ecstasy, or we could say we could no longer speak of bliss. Here begins a totally new dimension of existence, one that bears no comparison to the ecstatic experience. We should also add that no one, no entity or being, no self or consciousness passes over the line. Passing over simply means all experiences of self or consciousness have permanently ceased. So what's interesting about this is, again, she's talking about a new dimension of existence that is completely beyond any sense of self and completely beyond consciousness. And this, of course, would be the state that Nisargadatta Maharaj is in. And so when the questioner asks him to describe his state, it can't be described. Yeah, Jay says, such a thing cannot be conceptualized. It can't be described. And that's why his answer is, I can only tell you what it isn't. Right? I can't tell you what it is. I can only tell you what it isn't. In fact, we just heard Bernadette Roberts describe it as not ecstasy. Or we could say not bliss. It is not that. Right? It's beyond that. Again, Nisargadatta says, only by negation, as uncaused, independent, unrelated, undivided, uncomposed, unshakable, unquestionable, and unreachable by effort. Every positive definition is from memory and therefore inapplicable. And yet my state is supremely actual and therefore possible, realizable, and attainable. The questioner says, are you not immersed timelessly in an abstraction? Ms. Argadatta says, abstraction is mental and verbal and disappears in sleep or swoon. It reappears in time. I am in my own state, timelessly in the now. Past and future are in the mind only. I am now. So interesting also about his description when he says that, the questioner asks, are you in an abstraction? Nisargadatta answers that abstraction is mental and verbal. And he says it disappears in sleep or swoon. So if you think about when you're in a deep sleep right now, notice that when you're in a deep sleep, there are no ideas of abstraction. The reason that I read from Bernadette Roberts' book today in The Guiding Light is because I was reading an answer to a question in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and I felt like the best way to really look at the answer was to do a full study of Bernadette Roberts' experience. And again, if you really want to listen to that in full, and I do recommend it because it's incredible what she shares, you can go to reginadonacres.com. Go to the audios link, go to the Guiding Light. From within the Guiding Light page, you'll click the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and then go down to the audio that's called Experience Number 2. But just now, when the questioner asked Nisargadatta, are you in an abstraction? Nisargadatta's answer was that abstraction disappears in sleep. Well, today's question that we were studying in the Guiding Light is, what is the state beyond bliss? And in that answer, Ramana Maharshi answers that the state beyond bliss resembles inactive, deep sleep. He says, in this state, in spite of the activity of the body and the senses, there is no external awareness. As in the case of a child who is immersed in sleep and not conscious of the food given to him by his mother. And that would be like a young infant that is suckling a breast while asleep, not aware that it's suckling. A yogi who is in this state is inactive while engaged in activity. This is also called the natural state of absorption in oneself without concepts. So again, Nisargadatta right now is describing the exact same state. He described it as a natural state. He said it is the only natural state. And now he is comparing it to sleep, where there are no mental or verbal concepts at all. Again, he was asked, are you not immersed timelessly in an abstraction? And Nisargadatta answered, abstraction is mental and verbal and disappears in sleep or swoon. It reappears in time. I am in my own state, timelessly in the now. Past and future are in the mind only. I am now. the question, the world too is now. Nisargadatta asks, which world? The questioner says, the world around us. Nisargadatta says, it is your world you have in mind, not mine. What do you know of me when even my talk with you is in your world only? You have no reason to believe that my world is identical with yours. My world is real, true as perceived, while yours appears and disappears according to the state of your mind. Your world is something alien, and you are afraid of it. My world is myself. I am at home. It's very difficult for me to speak to this because, of course, my world is still the world of perception. And what Nisargadatta is referring to is beyond perception. It's beyond external consciousness. It's beyond sub-object consciousness. The world, and again, world here is just a word. the world that Nisargadatta is referring to is the state of awareness, aware of awareness only. The best idea I can come up with to point to this, the book that I am reading and contemplating on my own time in the morning each day right now is a book. I don't have it down here with me, but the title is something like The Advanced Seeker's Guide or something similar to that. It's written by a man named Floyd Henderson, who was a student of Nisargadatta Maharaj. And in that book, when Floyd is pointing in the direction of awakening beyond consciousness, he talks about a steel beam. And he says that, you know, when we look at it with our bodily perception, with our senses, you know, we see a steel beam. But if we had a powerful microscope and looked at it, we would see something completely different. And he goes on and he talks about how if you look at within an atom, and of course I can't follow this completely because I've never been a science geek. But if you look within an atom, you know, he talks about how atoms are made up of, what is it, protons and quarks or something like that. And if you look within protons and quarks, what you find is space. So the closer and closer that you look at a still beam, what you find is space. So what this says to me is, you know, I guess it doesn't say anything to me. Let me just say this. What I am hearing from witnesses that I trust, those witnesses being Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Bernadette Roberts, and now Floyd Henderson. What I'm hearing from witnesses that I trust is that there is an awakening that is beyond consciousness entirely. And beyond consciousness entirely, reality is known. Those of us that are still within consciousness do not know reality because reality is blocked by perception and thought. Just a moment ago, I read to you from Bernadette Roberts where she called it a new dimension entirely. You know, what is being talked about are things that we cannot imagine. And therefore, I find it unnecessary to attempt to do so. But I think, yes, yeah, Jay is saying, so the progress is healed perception, awakening to consciousness, and awakening to reality. Yes. So I think what's important for us is that one thing that is very, very, very common on the spiritual path is that we read and see books like A Course in Miracles or masters like Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana Maharshi, and we think we know something. We talk as if we know something. We correct each other. We debate each other. And what this is really telling us is we don't know a damn thing. And in order to know, we have to keep moving forward with the process of letting go of ourself. That's important. That's about the only thing I get out of a teaching that is explaining to me something I cannot begin to comprehend with the mind. Don't become arrogant. Don't think we know something because we don't know anything. If we still see a world, we don't know a thing. And by the way, just to mention, since I've mentioned the Advanced Seeker's Guide a couple of times recently, I just want to say that in year 3 of Gentle Healing, that will be our textbook. So everybody that's in Gentle Healing will get to go through that book next year. Now, of course, you're focused on NTI. So back to I Am That. Nisargadatta is saying, because the man asks, you know, the man says, the world too is now. And Nisargadatta says, which world? And the man says, the world around us. And Nisargadatta says, it is your world you have in mind, not mine. What do you know of me? When even my talk with you is in your world only. You have no reason to believe that my world is identical with yours. My world is real, true as it is perceived, while yours appears and disappears according to the state of your mind. Your world is something alien, and you are afraid of it. My world is myself. I am at home. Questioner, if you are the world, how can you be conscious of it? Is not the subject of consciousness different from its object? Nisargadatta says, consciousness and the world appear and disappear together. Hence, they are two aspects of the same state. And again, today, reading with Ramana Maharshi and reading with Bernadette Roberts, they both agree with this. We're on page 16J. They both agree with this, that consciousness and the world appear and disappear together. So when you awaken beyond consciousness, the world disappears. In fact, the way, again, Ramana Maharshi described that is there is no external consciousness. And as you all know, we need external consciousness to see a world. It's called subject-object consciousness. Without subject, there is no object. And what they are talking about, awakening beyond the subject, beyond subject consciousness, beyond any self. And without a self, there is no perception. A self is required for perception. So again, Nisargadatta says, consciousness and the world appear and disappear together. Hence, they are two aspects of the same state. The questioner says, in sleep, I am not, meaning I am not conscious, and the world continues. And Nisargadatta says, how do you know? And the questioner says, on waking up, I come to know. My memory tells me. Nisargadatta says, memory is in the mind, and the mind continues in sleep. And I can validate that the mind continues in sleep because to a certain degree, until I reach a certain state of sleep, which I guess is the one we call deep sleep, I have awareness in sleep. You probably do too. I mean, but my awareness is becoming more keen than before. And so falling into sleep until I reach the state of deep sleep, I am able to observe the mind's movements during sleep. And it moves like crazy. And in fact, I'm rather see while I'm sleeping. It's just bizarre. Almost more bizarre than dreams. This is before they manifest to the point of what we would call dream. It's almost like an in-between state. The mind is active, but it's not active enough to produce a dream. So if we're talking about awakening beyond mind, awakening beyond self, again, although deep sleep is often used as an example for us to help us try and understand what no external consciousness is or what awakening beyond consciousness is, it's often pointed to as an example. It's only an example. It's not a real comparison, because the mind does exist in sleep. And the mind is moving in sleep. Even A Course in Miracles tells us this, that the mind never quits moving. So you can't compare a situation where there is mind and say that it's exactly the same as a situation where there is not mind. So here's a word I don't know, so I need to look this word up before I continue. That often happens. I guess I have a very small vocabulary because I often come across words that I don't know. Okay, abeyance. And abeyance means a temporary suspension. Okay, so the questioner says, first of all, let me just remind you of the conversation. The questioner said that in sleep he is not conscious, and yet the world continues. And Nisargadatta said, how do you know? And he said, on waking up, I come to know. My memory tells me. You know, so I'm waking up, I see a world. My memory tells me there was a world there yesterday. Therefore, there must have been a world in between the two, right? And Nisargadatta says, memory is in the mind. The mind continues in sleep. And then the questioner says, it is partly in abeyance, or it is partly suspended. And Nisargadatta says, but its world picture is not affected. As long as the mind is there, your body and the world are there. Your world is mind-made, subjective, enclosed within the mind, fragmentary, temporary, personal, hanging on to the thread of memory. So this is what I was saying a while ago. Even though masters often use deep sleep as an example to try and help us understand what awakening beyond consciousness is like, because that's our closest resemblance. It's only our closest resemblance. It's not identical, because there is still mind in sleep. Mind is still moving in sleep. And as a result, the world and the body continue to exist. We do not go beyond the mind when we go into deep sleep. So again, Nisargadatta said that your world is mind made. And the questioner says, so is yours. Nisargadatta says, oh no. I live in a world of realities, while yours is of imaginings. Your world is personal, private, unshareable, intimately your own. Nobody can enter it, see as you see, hear as you hear, feel your emotions, and think your thoughts. In your world, you are truly alone, enclosed in your ever-changing dream, which you take for life. My world is an open world, common to all, accessible to all. In my world, there is community, insight, love, real quality. The individual is the total, the totality in the individual. All are one, and one is all. So a couple of different things happening here. First of all, Nisargadatta is saying to this man, at least I'm assuming it's a man, that your world is only your world. No one else can enter it, see as you see, hear as you hear, your thoughts. And that is true as long as ego continues within our thought system. Now, there's a portion of this that is not entirely true. For example, if you all were at my house and we all looked out my front window, we'd all agree, yep, that's Pike's Peak. And then if we went to my back porch and looked out my back window, we'd all agree, yeah, those are the Spanish Peaks. So there are certainly shared perceptions. It's not like I'm the only one that sees Pike's Peak and the rest of you guys are like, what are you talking about? I don't see a big mountain there. Right? We're in agreement. But because we each see through the filter of the individual mind, the way we see even our shared world of perception is drastically different. And again, the more I become aware, the more I'm also aware of great differences in how we see. So it's absolutely true that as long as ego is in the thought system, our way of seeing, our way of thinking, our way of understanding is completely different, and every single one of us is absolutely unique. You can find someone else whose thought and perceptions agree with yours to some degree. You can find some commonalities with another person, but you can find no one else who agrees with you 100% of the time on all things. In that way, we each have a unique bubble, a unique world, and no one else ever experiences our world. So that's what Nisargadatta is explaining to this questioner, that you know, how limited, and you know, the word I often use is self-centered his world is, because that's what it is. Our world, as long as the ego continues to exist in the mind, our world is self-centered. And not one of us escapes a self-centered world. We all live in it. Now, when the ego ends, then the self-centered world ends too. Now, Nisargadatta then talks about his world, and he's using what I perceive as an interesting choice of words. He's using words like community and individual in his description. And the reason I say that's an interesting choice of words is based on my contemplation of beyond consciousness. There really isn't anything that you could call community, and there really isn't anything that you could call individual either. So he's using words in order to get some kind of a point across, but the words don't really have a basis at all. He says, "My world is an open world, common to all, accessible to all. In my world is community, insight, love, real quality. The individual is the total." Now, right there, using the word individual as the total, he's already negated the word community. Because if the individual is the total, how could there be community? So you can tell that these words are purely symbolic. And in fact, they point far beyond anything that we can imagine within perception. So when listening to him, we really need to listen beyond words to get any grasp at all of what he's pointing to with these words. "My world is an open world, common to all, accessible to all. In my world, there is community, insight, love, real quality. The individual is the total, the totality. The totality is in the individual. All are one, and one is all." You need to get the sense of what he is saying without expecting the words to have any real meaning. The sense that I get is an essence, although I think it's actually beyond even the word essence. An essence that is everything complete within itself. Therefore, it is like community, right? Like communion. And yet it's not like community, not like communion, because it is one. It is more like an individual in that way, because it is one. It is not many joining. So it's both community and individual. It's a totality. All is one, and one is all. The questioner says, "Is your world full of things and people as mine?" Nisargadatta says, "No, it is full of myself." So there we are again. I used the word essence, although I believe it's beyond essence. Essence, complete, whole, therefore both community and individual in one. The questioner says, but you do see and hear as we do. Nisargadatta says, yes, I appear to hear and see and talk and act, but to me it just happens, as to you digestion and perspiration happen. The body-mind machine looks after it, but it leaves me out of it. Just as you do not need to worry about growing hair, so I do not need to worry about words and actions. They just happen and leave me unconcerned, for in my world, nothing ever goes wrong. Now again, all I do is highly recommend that you go and listen to the audio that was recorded today under the guiding light, the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, experience number 2. Because in that audio, I read Bernadette Roberts' experience of awakening from what A Course in Miracles calls the real world. She calls it the unitive state. Nisargadatta would call it consciousness. Awakening from consciousness to beyond consciousness. Or using the language of A Course in Miracles, awakening from the real world to heaven, or from true perception to knowledge. Because again, Nisargadatta is talking about the exact same thing here. And if you have a full understanding of the teaching I did today earlier, then you have a full understanding of what he's saying in this paragraph, because it's the exact same thing. He says, I appear to hear and see and talk and act, but to me, it just happens, as your digestion or perspiration happens. Think about your digestive process, unless you're being noisy while doing that. Think about your digestive process. How much awareness and control do you have of your digestive process? Doesn't it just happen? Leave you completely out of it. You are not really witnessing your digestive process. You certainly aren't thinking about or making it happen. It leaves you completely out of it. Nisargadatta is saying that the body, the entire body, and what it does is the same to him as the digestive process is to us. It happens just as automatically, and it leaves him completely out of it, just like he is, just like we are completely left out of our digestive process. And again, today's teaching explains the transition that gets to the point where the body is this automatic and no longer in need of a driver, a person. I appear to hear and see and talk and act, but to me it just happens, as to you digestion or perspiration happens. The body-mind machine looks after it, but leaves me out of it. Just as you do not need to worry about growing hair, so I need not worry about words and actions. They just happen and leave me unconcerned. In my world, nothing goes wrong. This is also like what I just read to you a moment ago from Ramana Maharshi, where he said that it was like a babe taking food from its mother, you know, without being aware, you know, like the little baby suckling on the breast while it's sound asleep, not knowing that it's suckling on the breast. So it's just kind of interesting that I should happen to come to the same discussion in two separate books today. This must be a discussion that we are ready for, even though we can't imagine it. I have 8 minutes left, and that's the end of that particular message, and I do not want to start another message with just 8 minutes left, so I am going to play a song. I'm opening up my YouTube channel. And let me just peruse it for a moment. Not this song, but thank you, Honor. Peruse it for a moment and see what song I want to play. Oh, here's a good song. This is Remember by Omkara. Perfect. All right. Thank you very much, y'all, for coming and listening to this teaching along with me. And as soon as I can find you, I'll let go of the mic. Ah, there you are. Okay, letting go of the mic. Bye.